Turning data into dollars. First, let me introduce our panelists. Jeff Wender, SVP Digital at Nielsen, sitting in the center. Closest to me, Alexei Vandewire, the CEO of AdsWiz. Simon Cole is next to him, CEO of 7 Digital. Hey, Patrick, that's Patrick Couch, Director of Advertising Strategy at Triton Digital. And at the end of the row, Matt Cuter, CEO of Audio HQ. That's what I said when I saw him.
You brought your own fan club.
We're not a mature bunch, and it's Vegas.
Data. Big data. Smart data. It is one of the most important dimensions of audio and audio advertising industries. What is big data? Why is it so important? And to whom is it important? In this session, we'll discuss a data value chain, as it were, and examine how information brings dollar value to audio publishers. That's music services and broadcasters, also consumers, and also advertisers. In preparing for this panel, I learned a great deal, and I'm eager for our 5 panelists to share their deep and explicit knowledge of how big data is shaping this industry. As we go along, please make mental notes of questions you'd like to ask our panelists, and you'll have your chance. Patrick, I'm going to throw it over to you to start, if that's all right with you. How does big data help Triton accomplish its mission of connecting marketers with audiences?
Well, with Triton, everything kind of revolves around data, from our webcast metrics to capturing data from exact listeners, and also third-party and first-party data. So our entire ecosystem revolves around data and how we can make that usable both for the publishers and the advertisers.
Thank you. Jeff, I've heard you refer to Nielsen as the original big data company.
We're 90 years old. So
okay.
if anyone can beat that and say that they've been in data longer than 90 years, then they can take that title from us.
Today, in 2015, how does Nielsen's historical data expertise intersect audio?
Well, as most people know here today, a little bit more than a year and a half ago, Nielsen went from a company that really focused on measuring what people watch and what people buy to adding what people listen to. We acquired Arbitron a little bit more than a year and a half because we understand the importance and the value of the audio world and how audio is becoming and has been an incredible growth area for how people consume and ultimately end up making purchase decisions. What we have tried to do since we've acquired Arbitron is apply a framework that we believe has been very successful about understanding how many people audio has reached, and being able to also help advertisers as well as publishers recognize the value of that ad inventory that they sell to agencies by measuring how ads resonate, does it provide brand value, and is there a return on investment. And it's understanding both, you know, what people watch, listen to, and buy, and putting all those different pieces together that brings a tremendous amount of value to the audio community. And it's what we've been trying to do for a little bit more than 2 years now.
Thank you. Matt, you speak to ad buyers all the time and also to audio publishers. How does data come up in your conversations?
Yeah, we really sit in the middle of marketers' budgets and advertising inventory. And so data plays an important role for us on both the front end and the back end. We need to make sure that we're targeting the right consumer for the marketer's message on the front end. And so we use data to make sure that we do that effectively. And then on the back end, we want to make sure that we're qualifying a campaign and ensuring that it was successful for our partners. And so we work with partners like AdsWiz to provide back-end metric data that they can use to judge the success of the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Simon, thank you for flying over from London. Part of 7 Digital's business focus is providing white-label streaming music services to companies. What's the focus of your data resourcing?
I think great to be here. Unusually on this panel, our focus is about data and how it can be used to improve content. I'm a 30-year veteran of the radio industry who a year ago became chief executive of a company that, as you say, builds digital music services. We're increasingly finding that we're building digital music services for radio companies, which is why we merged my radio company with 7 Digital a year ago. One of our big passions, and my personal passion, is how radio can move into streaming music services. We've already heard earlier today about how important it is to collect data from listeners in order to inform decisions in programming. There's no better way to do that than having an interactive relationship with your listeners who tell you by using streamed music services or music services you might power exactly what it is they're listening to and when they're listening to it. We are seeing an enormous interest from the music industry in data. We have had to step up in the last 6 months our own data team, and we now have a five-man team dedicated to inbound and outbound data. And that's because the record industry is beginning to make its own decisions based on what it's seeing people are doing on a daily basis on some of our customers. And we will deliver some 32 million streams a day globally. And we can tell you, you know, what music is trending. We can tell you what music people are adding, et cetera, et cetera. All of that is very, very powerful data. And I have a passionate belief that that data is the kind of thing that radio could be using to improve its position.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Alexei, could you talk a bit about how data advances your business and your client outcomes?
Sure. So compared to Simon, obviously we look at data for not necessarily for programming, but much more for the monetization. And what we've seen over the last couple of years is that obviously data is this one pretty rare situation where it's really a win-win-win. So it's a win pretty obvious for advertisers. So what we see is advertisers, whether more traditional, like Matt mentioning, or programmatic, they really want to be able to use data to target very precisely, to spend more on the users they're interested in and less on users they're not interested in, but also to be able to measure performance of campaigns. So through data, you can start certainly reconciling the budget you spend on impressions together with what actions actually happen in the back end. So to be able to really go back and know the performance, and we've started working with a partner there to really start measuring end-to-end performance of a campaign. So that's one thing, that's for the advertiser, so a pretty obvious win. Then you have the publisher on the other side where obviously because it's more effective for the advertisers, they can charge higher CPM. An example, we have one publisher of ours that is working on non-targeted campaigns, usually get around $5 CPM. On targeted, basic targeting, device, geolocation, get a $12 CPM. But on average, they get up to $35 when they use demographics. Totally different ballgame, so very interesting for the publishers. In turn, the listener is actually winning because the publisher doesn't need as many ads to be break-even or to start making money. They can actually reduce the ad load, which is, we know, it's a very important topic recently. And because of that, the listener is winning by not having as many ads per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So for us to enable that and to work with partners to do targeting, to do the campaign performance, et cetera, is very important.
Mm-hmm. You know, in talking with each of you and with others in the industry, I hear a lot about smart data and dumb data. Patrick, what does that mean for in terms of your work?
But the dumb impression has been around for a while. It was delivered just against geo device, and it didn't have any additional data, so it was broadcast out to millions or hundreds of thousands of listeners at any given time without a good bit of measurement against what that impression did. Smart data, on the other hand, is wrapping that avail, knowing who is coming with that avail, what kind of information, first-party, third-party data that might come along with that, and on the back end, like Alexei had said, is measuring a KPI. What was the action that happened because of that avail and that delivered impression? A smart impression is viewable from all angles. It's completely transparent on what was coming in and what is coming out.
Mm-hmm. So an unsmart, I hate to use the word dumb, but a dumb impression would be one in which there is not much audience segmenting or tracking or registration data or anything like that. And a smart impression has some kind of data overlay that tells us what the person is most receptive to in marketing messages. So
that's it exactly. And there is a need for that so-called dumb impression. It really serves a purpose. It still has a place. But as we go forward, we're going to find that the smart impression is going to really bring in the additional CPMs.
Mm-hmm. And Matt, does your work bear that out? Is there a higher price willing to be paid the smarter the impression is?
Yeah, I mean, we've really had a bifurcated marketplace for a while now. I mean, you have the smart impressions, the companies that have first-party data, like Pandora and Spotify, just to name a couple, who are able to charge a significant premium over the segment of the industry that doesn't have that first-party registration data. And so what's interesting now with the growth of third-party data and using that third-party data to target, we might be able to bridge the gap a bit between what we sometimes refer to as the haves and the have-nots. You know, if you're not collecting that first-party data and you don't have that base level of age, sex, and location, you can now use third-party data to make some smarter assumptions about who the user is on the other end. And if we insert that third-party data into the equation, all of a sudden you've turned dumb impressions smart, and you've leveled the playing field. So I think there's a big opportunity for the marketplace, I hate using the term too, but the dumber end of the marketplace to really leverage third-party data to catch up to what you know, the Pandoras and the Spotifys have been doing for a while via their first-party data.
Mm-hmm. A couple of interesting points here. Something on your mind, Alexi? Did you want to say something?
No. Totally, I'm sorry. Totally agree.
I thought you were raising the microphone. You mentioned a bifurcated market and also the difference between first and third-party sourcing of data, and I'd like to dig into both of those. Jeff, do you agree that it's a bifurcated market and this whole dumb versus smart thing developing as a schism in the marketplace?
The way, when we talk about smart data versus, or smart impressions versus dumb impressions, I think we tend to look at it a little bit differently. Data is about two things. It's about accuracy and precision. You can go about, and everyone in this room, and all the different, aspects of your business, you collect different amount of data. And the ability to be able to delve into it and understand whether that data can actually be utilized, be actionable, and be put in a way that can be validated is really where the value comes from. That's what makes it smart. There are a lot of people who will use different methodologies to collect a tremendous amount of demographic information or deep information about behavioral characteristics. If it's done in an improper way, you may utilize it and not generate any value. In fact, one of the big areas that Nielsen spends a lot of time focusing on is performing validation on a lot of people's use of different types of data sets and being able to take, whether it's taking a look at consumption, audio or video consumption, combining it with actual delivery of ads, being able to take that and validate whether or not you actually delivered it to the audience in which the first party said that they did. We have a product called Online Campaign Ratings. It's now called Digital Ad Ratings, which is built around the notion that a lot of people collect data, they say that they're delivering it to a particular audience, but lo and behold, in a lot of cases, they don't. So when we talk about smart data, it's figuring out how can you get the right data that can be validated and can ultimately ensure that the types of CPMs, the types of business engagements is exactly what the advertiser is supposed to be getting. So when it comes to bifurcating between first-party or third-party data, one is not necessarily better than another. It depends upon how that data is used and how it's captured. Understanding what people are listening to, thumbs ups and thumbs down, incredibly valuable data to understand consumer behavior characteristics, whether it's done from Pandora, Spotify, iHeart, it helps to refine and tune what that consumer experience is. Because that's first party or third party, doesn't really have that degree of value. Whether you can have an independent third party data that allows you to validate something and to charge a higher CPM makes it more valuable, but it doesn't make it any better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how you apply the data that makes it more valuable.
So it's not as simplistic, it's more nuanced than the intelligence level of the first capture of data. It's about the whole system of massaging data and turning it into good data.
We could go right now and do a first-party survey of everyone here in this room, and it would be very robust. Is that going to be reflective of the broader consumer outside of the Westgate Hotel? Probably not, because we bring a different set of experiences. So it's how you apply, it's how you collect the data. It's the methodology behind it. It's the rigor that you put into it and how it's applied. That's what makes data smart. And that's the, and I think that's where, sometimes big data becomes a challenge, because there's so many different places in which you can capture data. It's how you take it and apply it and combine it with other data sets that make it valuable, that create the types of return on investment that everyone here in the room is looking to secure.
Okay. Well, at any rate, getting data smarter in all its different dimensions is important. And I think this does lead us right into the first-party, third-party capture thing. Alexi, can you unpack that for us?
But to combine maybe to Jeff's point, I think at the end of the day, it's combining different sources of data. Mm-hmm. That's really what matters, to be able to put a profile as complete as possible. So obviously we have first-party data. In our case, and in the case of Triton, we're lucky enough to be in connection with a lot of publishers and a lot of advertisers. That allows us to have part of our publishers, probably about half of the impression, to have registration data. So you have that first-party data, which is very useful in terms of demographics, very useful in terms of gender and age and things like that, and you can overlay that on top of the impression. And then you obviously need additional data for all the publishers that don't have those first-party, but also for behavioral. So we work, for example, in our case, with a partner called Lotomy, and Lotomy allows us to have behavioral data. So who's in the market for a new car? Who's in the market for baby stuff? So to be able to re-overlay that information so that when advertisers or publishers for their own direct sales want to leverage the data, they can really go all the way. And for some advertisers, and that's where I probably disagree with dump impression versus smart, I think there's just different use case for every kind of buyers. Some buyers just want to target everybody or every male. Others really want to go very deep. They're ready to spend a lot of money per contact, but they want a very specific segment of the market. Mm-hmm. So that's where the combination of first party, third party, the combination of being able to target across device, to know who's actually both on the mobile and the web and be able to connect those two becomes very important.
Mm-hmm. Now, Simon, in your company and in your work, there's a different sort of division with data, if I understand it. And we talked about this a bit on the phone, and you described to me incoming and outgoing data. Can you explain that?
Yes, and you know, I think the way we work with data is very different from these guys. Mm-hmm. It's much more to do with informing content choices. And one of the fascinating things is incoming data, and I would, for me, in my world, this is the difference between dumb and smart data. Incoming data is becoming incredibly smart based on the devices it's coming from. When we were in radio, and radio was a transistor radio that was on a shelf and it was broadcast, there was no return path, there was no, there was nothing coming back. Now, if you look at the basic level, a connected radio, an internet radio, has a return path, and so at the very least will tell you, you know, what record it was that somebody tuned out of your stream on. But as we move into smartphones, and particularly at the moment wearables, you have devices which will tell you an enormous amount about what's going on with that user while they are consuming your content. And this is what's fascinating the music industry, is, for example, you know, 90,000 people leaving a concert, opening their smartphone, listening to a radio station or downloading a track. How many people leaving a concert venue instinctively want to go and add a track from that artist to their Spotify list or their Deezer list? How many people will tune to a radio station and stay listening to it if that radio station is playing the songs from the artist? We're working with a company at the moment called Open Live, who are actually providing a service where they are streaming tracks from concerts within 15 minutes of the concert finishing and offering people the opportunity to buy the tracks one by one as they come out of the concert venue. It's something artists are really interested in. Now, if you know where somebody is, then you know that they're near the concert venue. If you know that somebody's running because they've got a fitness app and it's measuring their pulse and they've got the fitness app switched on, then you know that they're a runner. You know, the amount of incoming data is incredible from some of these devices. But I agree with the panel. When you look at outgoing data, it's a case of how you use it, and that's where things get a little hazy, because certainly in the radio industry, there is a real kind of wonderment as to what you can do with this data, and there aren't that many people, and I'd quite like to do a little survey of the room in a moment, but in my experience, there aren't that many people in radio programming who are even using the basic data which basic streamed apps will give you, like, for example, you know, I mean, well, do you mind if I ask the room a question?
Go ahead, ask the room.
Who in the room is in radio programming rather than advertising and management? Okay, so a decent proportion. Who of those people who put their hand up can tell me what the number one song is that causes people to tune off your stream? Okay. So that information is easily available from any streaming app, and surely a pretty vital piece of information. I know, for example, that TuneIn use that information very regularly in the way they choose how to prioritize radio stations on their app. And I also know from having seen some of their data that there is an incredible correlation between records that cause people to switch off the radio, an incredible correlation. There are definitely switch-off songs. Now, if you're a music programmer and you are programming a switch-off song on your A-list, you should really know that. And even if only 10% of your listeners are on a smartphone, if half of those 10% are switching off at a particular song, it's a pretty good indication that the people who are listening on broadcast radios are doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Was it Nickelback?
No, I'm sorry. If they're in the room, I'm sorry. It was just a cheap joke at their expense.
That's confidential data.
Remember to make a mental note of any questions you come up with. You don't have to do this when you make your mental note. It's just something I do. Getting back to first and third-party data, it sounds to me like what we're headed for, and possibly already attaining to a large extent, is a complete profile that ranges from registration of a user through to all kinds of activity that the user does. And I'd like to understand better the role of first party and third party, how they interact, what the sources of them are, which is more important, which is bigger, which is better, which is smarter, and what the end goal is, and how feasible it is to have a really detailed user profile of listening audience. I don't have a particular one of you in mind for this, so somebody wants to jump in and say, yeah,
sure,
Alexa.
Sure. I can take that up. So I don't think one is better than the other. I think you probably need both. I think the first-party data is absolutely key in the sense that it's often more precise. It's more complete in the sense that if you use third-party data, you're often going to have gaps in your audience that you can't really have information on. So first-party data is more complete, more precise, cheaper in a way, at least if you have the scale. So very interesting from that point of view, but it's not going to give you everything because obviously first-party data is never going to give you behavioral information on e-commerce websites, on whatever other source of information. So it's a good source, but it's not enough. So using that and then combining that with third-party, which is going to give you additional information for whoever you don't have information on, but also information on households, information on behaviors and things like that, it's going to be very useful. Mm-hmm. And then I would say we're lucky in the radio audio industry is that we can almost feed back additional information, which is across device. I think we're in a very specific situation where music is something that you bring along with you almost everywhere and all the time, which means that we have a lot of information about people switching from their phone to their laptop at home or desktop or at work, etc. And we can help the rest of the community, the advertising community or the data community, with the cross-device information. So I think it goes both ways. We can benefit from what has been done, display or video, mobile, et cetera, but we can also help them. So it really goes both ways.
Mm-hmm. So the first-party data is typically registration data, basic ZAG registration. Patrick, you and I have talked about this as a key way of getting more data infusion into an operation. Do you agree with this, that it's really the combination of the two that brings it all to life?
Well, ZAG certainly forms a baseline that any publisher can provide, that baseline data that advertising can layer on top of.
And let's explain that ZAG is zip age gender.
Yeah, zip age gender. It's a basic registration data that any publisher can bring to the mix that serves as that baseline for any campaigns. And then you can bring in any of that additional information that Alexi mentioned with third-party behavioral, device, cross-device, any additional pattern matching that happens, if you happen to notice that a listener is using different devices throughout the day. They're on the treadmill listening to their iPhone, they're at work on a certain computer, they get home on a desktop computer, and then in the evening they're on an iPad. If you can create a profile around those different items, you create a much richer profile in total because you're looking at all the cookie data, you're looking at all the device ID that might come from mobile devices to create a total picture of that of the listener.
Mm-hmm. Should we stop calling it big data? Is all data big now, and it's really a question of useful, actionable, smart data?
Yeah, I think that's true.
All right. From here on in, you heard it here.
I think big data is a very outdated phrase. Big data comes from the time when there wasn't data, you know, and there now is. You know, there is oceans and oceans of data out there about mm-hmm. listeners. Can I just come back to the point of registration and perhaps be a little controversial? I would think that if the radio industry has one thing that it should be concentrating just about all of its energies in, it would be turning listeners into registered users. Mm. Because the competitors of the radio industry, and thank you. Let's be honest, those competitors are, and we've had them on the panel, and I know they're part of our industry generally, but the competitors to traditional broadcast radio are Pandora, Spotify, Deezer, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things the industry's wrestling with is how much these people are partners and how much they're competitors. But the difference between Pandora and a terrestrial broadcast radio station is that Pandora knows a ton more about its consumers, a ton more. The other difference is that the terrestrial radio station has a ton more of listeners. So if Pandora had a wish, it would be to have the number of users that the radio station has. If the radio station has a wish, it should be to turn that number into registered users.
Jeff, do you agree? Is that the key takeaway for broadcasters? Start registering more users?
I think what's most important right now is, well, first, to get back to your original question, it's not about big data anymore. It's about the right data. It's about being able to collect the right information so that you can understand your audience and be able to figure out the right way to transact on it. I think what you would find for the vast majority of the broadcast radio companies is they are collecting that data today. At least in my experience, when I go and meet with the variety of broadcast radio companies, they are working to collect that information through primary as well as secondary sources and being able to create and market that. And I think they're seeing a tremendous amount of value from things like that. As an example, one of the things that we at Nielsen have been able to actually help in the process of doing is being able to identify and show with the collection of data and big data about consumer and people who are listening is what is the actual return on investment that broadcast radio companies are able to do today for advertisers. So when an advertiser airs, are they able to use and harness big data to see that their audience was exposed to a particular commercial or an advertisement, and then to be able to follow that up and see, did they actually make a purchase decision as a result of it? And this is something that we've done where broadcasters today, as well as companies that are purely in the digital space are doing, is to be able to come back and see directly what type of incremental sales they're doing. So I don't necessarily view it as a case where one party is doing it better than the other. I think in many cases, they're both embracing it. It's a matter of ultimately figuring out what that value proposition is and going and showing that that big data can be used to do a lot of incredible things.
Mm-hmm. So part of that is that it's not just capturing information about the audience and the user, it's also about delivering good smart data to the advertiser to verify and to measure return on investment. Matt, yeah, no comment on that.
Well, I was just going to, to your point, you know, there's a couple different things. So, as you mentioned, for collecting data and understanding your consumer, getting that information in-house is very important. That's first-party registration data becomes very valuable. Third-party data helps to identify consumption habits, to be able to tie the two together and understand what are things such as return on investment. A big area of focus for us and part of our digital audio measurement is the ability for broadcasters, as well as all members of the audio world, to be able to assign and capture demographics without capturing first-party registration data. Some cases, first-party registration data can be very valuable. And it can be very have a high degree of efficacy. We've also found, and in fact, we have a product in the market today that's built around the fact that sometimes, not in all cases, but in some cases, first-party registration data isn't what it's cracked up to be. And independent third-party sources have to come in and help agencies and advertisers validate that to see whether or not that information is accurate. And that's something that we do today. And when you talk to, and I know, you know, most people in this room are valued and interested in what agencies and advertisers think about. When they go off and issue RFPs, they're asking for these types of solutions to be in place because they want to have third-party validation built around you know, efficacy around this type of data that has mm-hmm. to come from third party, not first party, in some contexts.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what are advertisers looking for when it comes to validation, measuring ROI, lift of the campaign that has been delivered? What are the key performance indicators that they want to know about?
Sure. You know, I think today, and in general, we spend a lot of time talking about targeting on the front end and how we use data to reach the right consumer with a message. What we don't spend a ton of time on, and I think it's a missed opportunity for the space, is the back end. What happens once an advertisement runs? There is a ton of data that's available to us now and that will be available to us down the line that we can use to decide if campaigns are successful, if creative is working, you know, if listeners are engaged and are taking an action based on hearing a message. And I think, unfortunately for the online radio marketplace, in a lot of cases, advertisers and agencies have kind of looked at it in two ways. They've either looked at it like traditional radio, where there isn't the opportunity to track an engagement on the back end with an advertisement directly in real time. And so they've really just focused on, am I serving an impression to the right person? Is that impression running? Is it validated, et cetera? And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have agencies and advertisers who are trying to look at online radio like they look at traditional digital display advertising or video advertising, where they're you know, trying to see whether somebody clicked on a banner and did something, and then track them throughout that process. And for online radio, as consumption continues to shift to mobile devices, to connected devices, to cars, the ability of the consumer to engage via a display unit is greatly diminished. But there's a lot of other things that we can look at and point to as an industry on the back end. A good example of that, you know, one of the things that AdsWiz provides is listen-through rate information for campaigns. So, you know, one of the key performance indicators for online video is typically view-through rate. Are people skipping? Are they watching the entire video ad? Audio listen-through rates are generally significantly higher than video view-through rates. But as an industry, we don't really spend a ton of time talking about that, and we should. And that kind of data then can be parsed in a million different ways. An advertiser could look at four or five different pieces of creative, and they could see the difference in terms of people tuning out to creatives A and B versus C and D, and make some adjustments to optimize their campaign. So there's a lot of things I think that we can look at on the back end. I think the most important thing is getting away from traditional radio KPIs and traditional digital KPIs and creating something that's more universally used across our industry and specific to our industry because consumption and the environments that people are consuming online audio is so different from traditional digital, from video online, and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm.
Jeff, what's on your mind? And Alexi, too, we'll get to you. Let's shorten our answers as much as possible. I want to leave time for the audience as well.
Yeah, I'll keep this real short. Advertisers care about one thing. Did this campaign make me more money than it would if I didn't run this campaign? It's that simple. And the ability to be able to take big data, to be able to take things such as understanding people's consumer, you know, consumer packaged good purchases or seeing their credit card data, very big data sets, and matching that with their listening and being able to determine their ROI, that's what it's all about. We do that with both broadcast as well as with digital. And the value that digital brings, especially with their big data sets, is they can be much more granular. So you not only can look at a particular audience and say, you know, we've done studies that show that for every dollar invested in radio, there's a $6 incremental return on investment for a variety of different categories. Most recently did one for a telco, where it was over $200 million worth of incremental revenue for an ad campaign as a result of looking at credit card purchases directly tied to people who consumed audio. But in the case of digital, you can be much more precise and not just look at the overall audience holistically, but take a look at specific types of music genres because you have that granular and precision data. You can look at when people are listening at different times of day. That's incredibly compelling and allows you to harness it in ways that that aren't, you know, naturally thought about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'd like to come back to what Simon and Matt have been saying. So first thing is that in terms of the publishers, advice, yes, I think you should refocus on registration, but I think also you should focus on using the data. Simon mentioned the fact that there's a lot of information out there to songs that switch off people, etc. Definitely you should use that, but also on the advertising side. Because I would argue that, I mean, we often talk about competition between Pandora, Spotify, and broadcasters. I think the real competition from a monetization point of view comes from TV or from other type of media. I think there's a lot of opportunities out there to actually grow the pie and not just try to fight for a small size of pie. Today, the digital radio pie is tiny. It is way smaller than it should be. We have a unique position in mobile. I mean, today, mobile audio applications are almost the largest consumption of mobile. There's about a $100 billion spent on mobile advertising. How much does audio get out of that? Definitely not its share. So use data to be able to go to agencies and compete with other media. Today, programmatic is getting pretty big. Programmatic is nothing without data. If we shy away from data, audio in general will be completely cut out of the equation. So I would say get registration, but also don't be afraid of data. Use it. Leverage partners that can help you use it for monetization, for content. There's a huge opportunity there.
Thank you. All right, remember this? Anybody got one, a question from the audience? There we go.
To the point of speaking about streaming, let's say, with registration versus not, and I realize there can't be a flat answer to this, but what do you look at in terms of increased CPM or what have you when you've got better data versus the open everybody that listens to my stream?
But I can take that. I think when you're just talking about registration data, right, so you're just talking about age and sex, because location can really be found in a non-registered situation as well. But when you're talking about age and sex, you know, it can increase CPMs by 50 to 100% on average, depending on the buy. And it can also be the difference between getting on a buy and not getting on a buy. So there's that part of the equation as well. I mean, there's a lot of impressions available. Not enough, but there's a lot of impressions available with that first-party data that, you know, advertisers will go there first, and then they'll look for non-first-party data inventory after that. So the CPM is definitely higher, but it's also the getting on the buy piece that shouldn't be discounted.
We've seen the same with the CPMs. It creates that baseline, moving it from that dumb to a smarter impression very quickly. And it just sets it into a different area. I would say that with the geo, we've seen an even higher CPM as spot marketers come into play, wanting certain areas to deliver a certain message in geo. Layered that on with the age and gender, and it quickly increases the CPM to 3 to 4 times.
Yes, John.
Yes, you know, one of the benefits of using sampled data is that we always knew where the biases in the data existed. So I wanted to first say kudos to Jeff for bringing up the issue of validation of data. In the world of big data, we don't talk about that issue enough. And what I would like to ask the panel is, are you aware of where there is bias, because there is bias, in the data sets that you currently use? And if you are, can you at least name one or a few of them for those of us in the room so that we can understand better?
I could take it partly. I agree with your point. I think in general, what would help the industry the most is to move to some sort of standardized measurement on the front end and the back end. I think that's where we kind of get into trouble because, as I was saying earlier, the market is so bifurcated. There's so many different things offered on the front end and the back end from so many different providers of inventory, that it makes it really difficult for advertisers and agencies to evaluate the entire picture. So having some third-party validation around the space on the front end and the back end is something that is definitely needed and would help. To go to an example, and a lot of people talk about this all the time, services that register users like Pandora and Spotify and the zip code information that's provided. Right, there's always a question of, well, if I registered as a user while I was in college, and I've moved back home, and my zip code is my college zip code, am I going to still get targeted in that way? On the other end, services that don't have that first party data, they will rely on IP targeting or longitude latitude on mobile, and in a lot of cases that data can be flawed too, because if somebody's streaming at work and their server's mapped to a different geolocation, they could get the wrong information. data is never going to be perfect across the board. That's one good example that we see in the space between the two different sets of publishers. But you know, I think in general, if we can have a standard measurement solution on the front end and the back end, it solves a lot of that. And we also have to understand, as great as data is, it's never going to be perfect. It's just not going to be perfect. We're just trying to more smartly target, plan, and buy advertising across these platforms.
All right. Oh, okay, let's squeeze in one final question.
It's a comment and a question. It sounds like big data, which for all of its faults and its attractive elements and the bias that was just mentioned by Stacey, comes usually in the form of direct response, which seems to be colliding with, as you were saying just now, Matt, standardized measurement. So those two come together. One's pretty rigid, and you do understand the bias when you're in the measurement domain. But we're going through a revolution about how measurement collides or does cooperate with the big data that goes along with it. So in line with that, you know, I didn't hear enough about evaluating the metrics that go into big data. Like, you know, all that basic boring stuff like match rates and quality and recency and deduplication. You know, if that's going to come along to measurement, do you all have any thoughts or feelings about how that becomes, you know, a measurement tool with discipline around it?
Well, I can't answer that question because the person who asked it is actually my boss. So if I do that, I mean, that introduces bias right there. So I'm going to be very clear.
It's a promotion interview, isn't it?
Exactly. I'm going to pass on this one because I don't want to introduce
bias.
It's an addition
of The Apprentice we're watching here, isn't it?
Something like that, I guess. Either that or he's telling me something. I can't tell.
I would say with the measurement data, it all comes down to the quality of the data and ensuring that the data is rich and as recent as possible. What Matt was saying, if the data is old, it becomes aged very quickly and of no use. So it has to be constantly validated, validating a zip code, either through IP checking or lat long if available, and asking the listener to update their data if there's something that is wrong on the registration side. On the measurement side, really the same applies. It has to be constantly cleansed, deduped, and just validated to be as correct as possible.
That was a point I was going to make in answer to the previous question. Data, especially registration data, should not be thought of as a one-off thing. If you're in the business of using registration,